Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is Jainism, a way of life. And of course, this is clearly by way of preparing for Mahavir Jayanti, as you know, which falls just maybe on Tuesday or so, two days later. And Mahavira was in his own right an enlightened one, and so our reading was from the chapter of Enlightened One. And we are, through this lecture, trying to pay homage to the Enlightened One, the Mahavira. In the Dhammapada elsewhere, Buddha says, better than a man who conquers 1,000 times 1,000 men is one who has conquered himself. He indeed is the mightiest of warriors. And Mahavira, that very name, it means mightiest warrior. We find that Mahavira was the 24th Tirthankara, the founder of Jainism. The very first Tirthankara was Adinath or Rishabhdev. 23rd Tirthankara was called Parshvanath. In between also some people have the whole list of names which we don't have by heart. But he was the last Tirthankara. Now it is also interesting to see the meaning of the word Tirthankara. Tirtha has many meanings. One of the meanings of Tirtha is water. And water, in a way, we can take as the water or ocean of samsara. So Tirthankara is one who takes you across this ocean of samsara. Water also is symbolizing matter or material existence, worldly life, mundane existence. So Tirthankara is one who is also helping you to cross over this worldly life and mundane existence. Tirtha also is road or a passage. So, in a way, he is the one who carves out a passage. Like a ship which is going, it always leaves behind a trail. So also these great ones, what do they leave behind? They don't leave behind a clear-cut path where you just follow, putting your foot on wherever footprints are there. You put your foot there and then quietly and clearly you follow that path. Not that kind of a road, because our reading says, trackless indeed is he. There is no track by which you can follow and catch him. So, what is it that they leave behind? The road or the passage? It is the teachings which they have given, which if we read, study and practice, we will get that road or a passage through which we can achieve what they achieved. That is, go over to the other shore of the mundane existence. So, Mahavira is one who has crossed over and gone to the other shore. He has become a liberated soul. He is what they call as the Siddha or Siddha Purusha and so on. One of the definitions which is given in your handout is in the Theosophical Glossary, which says, simply put, Tirthankara is a Jaina saint or chief, of which there were 24, and it is claimed that one of them was the spiritual guru of Gautama Buddha. Then what explanation given by HPB is actually makes us aware that it is in our mind that there are these distinctions between one religion to the other, one religious teacher from the other, but how they tend to actually mix into each other. As while talking about something which is known as 35 Buddhas of compassion or confession, she says that 24 of them actually were the Tirthankaras. So how seamlessly Buddhism and Jainism seem to be blending in certain respects, you see? See how what she says there in the Secret Doctrine. 35 Buddhas of Confession. These personages, however, though called in the northern Buddhist religion Buddhas, may just as well be called Rishis or Avatars. These great Mahatmas or Buddhas are a universal and common property. It is not really restricted to Buddhism or Jainism. It's a universal and common property. They are historical sages. At any rate, for all the occultists who believe in such a hierarchy of sages, the existence of which has been proved to them by the learned ones of the fraternity. Of these Buddhas or enlightened, the far distant predecessors of Gautama the Buddha, and who represent, we are taught, once living men, great adepts and saints in whom the sons of wisdom had incarnated and who were therefore, so to speak, minor avatars of the celestial beings. 11 only belong to the Atlantean race and 24 to the fifth race from its beginnings. They are identical with the Tirthankaras of the Jainas. So, a little bit of metaphysical explanation, but it just shows that these are verily the Buddhas of confession as far as HPB and the occultists are concerned. Now, we are told that one of them, he is supposed to have taught Gautama the Buddha. We are also told that Mahavira was senior contemporary of Buddha. They have flourished almost at the same time. Some put the date as 527 BC, some put the date as 599 BC and so on. But we are told that unlike Buddha, who came from a family which had no religious background as such, he was a prince. Whereas Mahavira had a family background where the parents themselves were called the Shramanas. They were ascetics who followed the teachings of Pashvanath, and they are also the followers of the faith of what the Buddhists call as Arhat and what the Jainas call as Arihant. It's one and the same thing. Arhat and Arihant. See how closely similar are the terms. So they were the followers of Arihant or Arhat. And so unlike the Brahmins who followed the rituals, ceremonies, worships and so on, his parents followed only the ascetic life. In fact, the real name of Mahavira was, interestingly, Vardhaman. Because when he was born, it is said that suddenly there was increase in prosperity and wealth of the family. There was increase in the merit of the family. So he brought about the increase, vruddhi as they say. And so he was called Vardhaman. To the Buddhists, he was known as Nirgrantha Nataputra. Nirgrantha. Granthi is a knot. Granthi is fetter. And very truly, he was Niragrantha. He was without any fetters. Outwardly unclad and inwardly without any attachments or fetters of any kind. He was, at the age of 30, like Jesus or like, if you take Buddha, he left home and possessions and he went into forests in the solitude and recluse to meditate for 12 years. And after meditating for 12 years, he came back to give the teachings. So in that sense, because he renounced all the possessions, he becomes Nirgrantha. And probably, maybe he was wearing some clothes or not, but the tradition says that he was a naked ascetic. So outwardly unclad and inwardly without fetters. Nirgrantha Nataputra. Interestingly again, if you see, Nata, Gnatra, Naya, this is the name of a clan which is a Kshatriya clan. Just like Buddha, it is said was Sakya Putra or Sakya Muni, who belonged to the Kshatriya clan called Sakya. Similarly, Mahavira was also belonging to a Kshatriya clan. We may feel that, oh, he has to be a Brahmin, but not so. He was belonging to a Kshatriya clan, and these Gnatrikas were known to be very strict ascetics who followed all the rules of religious, spiritual life, strict vegetarians and so on. Now, we are told that he is also called as Jina. Jaina is the philosophy given by him. Jainism is then the religion which comes from the word Jina. It comes from the Sanskrit word Ji Jaya. And in fact, Mahavira is called Jinendra. If the two Jainas meet, they'll say Jai Jinendra. You see? So Jinendra, Ji Jaya, that is conquering. He who has conquered the Indriyas, he who has conquered the lower animal passional nature, he who has therefore conquered the mortality, he doesn't have to really, he is not compelled to be born like us again and again. He is free from this wheel of birth and death. So he is a Jina, Jinendra, Tirthankara, the one who has conquered his lower nature. Now, if you look at the Jaina sects, in passing, we can say there are two main Jaina sects, Shvetambara and Digambara. The Digambaras are the ones who are known as being naked ascetics. Shvetambara are the ones who always wear a white cloth. Now, the Jaina philosophy as such is generally, if you read, is divided into three sections or three major parts. The first part, and it is very interesting to see the Jaina, what is known as epistemology or the theory of knowledge. It's very interesting. Second part is metaphysics, and the third part is known as ethics. Now, we'll be mainly concerned with ethics actually, because we are going to be talking about a way of life. But yet we will cursorily see what is this epistemology or theory of knowledge. The Jainas say that there are two kinds of knowledge, paroksha and aparoksha. You know, Shankaracharya is supposed to have said that if you want to know God, there must be aparoksha anubhuti. Aparoksha anubhuti. Experience not through the eyes of others, but experience through your own eyes or through your own inner senses, as it were. Now, paroksha is indirect and aparoksha is a direct knowledge. So, aparoksha knowledge, just like Patanjali, even he says, it can be had by inference, it can be had by testimony. Someone has the experience and he tells you. Whereas the direct knowledge, again, is of two kinds. There is a direct knowledge which is ordinary knowledge, and there is a direct knowledge which is absolute direct knowledge. Now, we can see that ordinary direct knowledge is what we all have through our five senses. Take a simple example which is often given from this platform, that there is Alfonso Mango, and you are told about by someone that there is the Alfonso Mango, which has yellow color, which is sweet in taste, and it is of such a size and shape. This becomes your indirect knowledge. But if you go, hold it in your hand, feel it, smell it, taste it, it becomes a direct knowledge. Now, this is ordinary direct knowledge. What the Jainas say is that there is a direct knowledge which is absolute direct knowledge, and which again is of three kinds. Because you are not having just the five senses. You are more than your five senses and the body. You are having your subtler senses, which in theosophy we call as astral senses and spiritual senses. So, as you use these different senses, you will know more and more about an object or about the reality. So, they say that if a person has conquered his lower nature to a certain extent, he will be able to have knowledge of things which you can't see with your naked eye. The smallest of the small, he is able to see. Things which are millions of miles away, he is able to see, which we call in our own language as clairvoyant faculty, which they call as avadhijnan, limited knowledge, which you can have with your astral senses. The other is where you can get into the mind of other, know about his thoughts, present and past, and this is what we may call as telepathy or thought transference, which they call as manah pryaya, entering into the mind of another, manah pryaya. But the third one, which as we say, this is all the psychic, as it were, powers and knowledge, but beyond that is spiritual, and that is something which only a liberated soul can have, and that is what they term as kaivalya jnana. Turn to Patanjali or turn to any system of yoga and they will describe absolute knowledge as kaivalya. Kaivalya jnana, where all your personality is dissolved and only that essence, which is the real I, remains. That is knowing the absolute truth. Now, based on this various degrees of knowledge, there is something very interesting in Jainism, which we have often said from this platform, something known as Nayavada or theory of judgment. They say that there are so many degrees of knowledge. Obviously, it means that to the object, there are many aspects and qualities and characters. Any object you take, it has innumerable qualities, characters, aspects. Turn to universe and it has even greater number of aspects and qualities. Turn to one reality and again, you have almost infinite aspects, facets and so on. So, what they say is that no one person is able to take into account all the aspects of a thing when he sees it, feels it, knows it. This is Nayavada. Nayavada therefore says that a person is able to see only some aspect of a thing. For instance, let us take, say, rose. Now, a person who is blind, he will say, what will he know about rose? He will know it from touch and smell. A person like us will say, okay, rose is red, maybe it has this shape, it has this smell, and so on, all that our five senses can convey. Someone who has that clairvoyant faculty can tell you something about the inner nature of the rose. Someone who is a chemist can tell you about its chemical composition. Only an omniscient person can take into account all the aspects of the rose, seen and unseen, and also tell you about the very essence which makes the rose a rose, which Immanuel Kant said, the thing in itself. Something which is in itself, that which is not changing, undying, and that which is what gives existence to the rose, like we talk about the very Atman in us. So, that also an omniscient person can see. Now, ordinary person is not able to see all this. Therefore, they say, Nayavada simply means a point of view. That from one point of view, suppose you are given a jug, and a man says, oh, jug is a substance, it's a hard, solid thing. Another one who looks into the air within the jug will say, no, it's not a hard, solid thing. And a Jaina will say, both are right. From one point of view, looking at the substance of which it is made, it is a hard, solid thing. From looking at the air within, it is not a hard, solid thing. And both are right. So, stemming from Nayavada comes another important theory, which is called Syadavada. Syadavada says that, well, since you are not able to get all the aspects of a particular thing at once, always be careful when you make your judgment. Remember that your judgment is only conditioned from one point of view, with all the limitations of your personality, is your judgment. And therefore, this is the thing which is extended to various religions and philosophies by the Jainas. Just as much as a person has limitation, so also every philosophy has its limitation. So, a person who is belonging to one religion or philosophy has only acquired one point of view of the universe, one point of view of the truth, one point of view of the reality. He has seen only one facet. Therefore, we have the beautiful story, which we have often said from this platform, regarding six blind men trying to tell you the nature of the elephant. One man touches the tail of the elephant and he says, elephant is like a rope. Another man touches the trunk and says, he is like a horse pipe. The third one touches the leg and says, he is like a pillar. The fourth will touch the tummy and say, he is like a drum. And each one is right from his point of view. So also, we are told that each of the system of knowledge is each of the philosophy is having a partial knowledge. This is what the Jainas call as relative reality, which we call as Samvritti Satya, relative truth, whereas the absolute truth is when you are going to be able to have a synthetic view of all the various aspects. So the Shadadarshanas or the six schools of Indian philosophy are only six points of view of the one reality. They are, none of them can claim a total possession of the total truth. That is why from this stems the Syadavada, that is a Jaina. When he is giving his own philosophy, he will always say, qualify or every naya with the word syada. My judgment when I make, I will say syada. It may be so. Or in a way. Or from one point of view, it may be so. And this is what I have to say. Just like the Buddhists always say, thus have I heard. And not really claiming for any revelation. This is yet another way of not claiming authority. Similarly, when they accept the teachings of other religions, they are not going to be fanatical either. By saying that only my religion has, everything is said by Mahavira. Now where is the need for studying other religions? No. He will say Syada. It may be so. From your point of view, probably you are right. And from my point of view also, maybe I am right. So Syada is what actually inculcates great tolerance, mutual tolerance of the various religions. And it's a very important concept of Jaina philosophy. Now we come to the second aspect. There are all the very subtleties of the theory of knowledge. We can't get into all that. But metaphysics is something we can look at. And again, the student will plead a lot of ignorance regarding their metaphysics. We have not been able to go into much detail. But barely we have to touch upon it in order to come to the ethics. Because they say every substance which is in the manifestation, that is divided into jiva and ajiva. Jiva is soul. And they said the essence of the soul is consciousness. Ajiva is that which is matter. And there are lots of other things. It's not very easy to understand the concept of ajiva. But one of the the finer classification of Ajiva is matter, which they call as Pudgala. Now, Jiva is important. They seem to be therefore talking about spirit and matter. Although in our philosophy, we do not differentiate between spirit and matter. We do not say that there is something like inorganic thing. We always say everything is organic. So there we seem to be differing a little from the Jaina philosophy. Now, Jiva or soul, and they say that this soul, which is consciousness, it is pervading all through the body. Like keeping a lamp at the corner of a room, it will light up the entire room. So also this consciousness pervades the body from the root of the hair to the very toe of your foot. It is there, and that's why you are able to have various sensation. If this consciousness was not there, you will have no sensation. Also, they further subdivide the various forms of life or the souls, as it were, though potentially all souls are equal. Depending upon the number of sense organs, there is a difference in the degree of these souls. So, for instance, they say the plants, they have one sense organ, touch, the tactile sense, as it were. Then, if you come to worms, they have the touch as well as taste. The ants will have touch, taste and smell. If you go to honeybee, it will have touch, taste, smell as well as sight. When you come to higher animals, birds and all that, they will have all five sense organs plus instinct. And when you come to man, in addition to that, he will have rational power and so on. So, this is how there is a gradation. And they said that the lowest down in the rung of these jivas or souls is something which they call as that which animates the various elements, earth, water, air, fire, and that is what they call as nigodas. The concept of nigoda seems to the student exactly same as the concept of the jiva, or rather the elementals and lives which we have in theosophy. Because they say that there is not even a little this thing in the space. Your space is not empty. It is packed with nigodas. Now that's what we say. There are these lives or elementals everywhere in space. And space is not really empty. Everywhere they are there. Like a powder in a box. These nigodas, that is the lowest kind of a soul or jiva they call, they are there everywhere in space. Now, that is why we can see all this is very well related with their doctrine of Ahimsa. Because they find there is not even little space which is without the life or without the jiva. So, you've got to be extra careful in practicing Ahimsa, which we will come to a little later. Now, going from here to the ethics of Jainism, we find that in ethics, to begin with, they say that, as we said, all souls are having infinite potentiality. But as theosophy and every religion says, there is something which is obstructing that potentiality from manifesting itself, from becoming actual. They say that every soul has a possibility of acquiring infinite power, infinite knowledge, infinite faith, bliss. Why is it that we don't? And they say that there are certain obstacles or obstructions. Now, what are these obstacles? And these obstacles are something which they describe as five ethical elements, which is there. We have not read about the Syadavada, which we only explained. But in one line, the ethical elements are bondage, ashrava, samvara, nirjara, and liberation. Bondage. What is it that causes the bondage of the soul? In fact, in a very subtle way, they do talk about two aspects of the soul. They say that there is that aspect of the soul which always remains very pure. But there is that aspect of the soul which seems to be getting sullied, defiled. It becomes impure. How does it become impure? And it is that, what is it that is causing the bondage of the soul? These are two important things. Now, they say that what causes the bondage of the soul is your identification with the body. And by body, they don't mean just the physical body, but identification with your whole personality. In the first place, how did you get your body and personality? And again, to that, the Jainas do admit that your body is not come to you by chance. The body is something which you have acquired, or it has come to you as a result of your past karma. So in that itself, you can see that they accept both the law of karma as well as the law of metempsychosis and rebirth. They say it is your past karma because of which you have got this body or this personality. And if you look at the karma, in fact, whole books are there on karma. I mean, we just saw in the library, but we have not got into gone into the details. But they say that there are 8 basic types of karma, which are subdivided into 148 types of karma. Somewhere, the way in which it is written about karma, you feel that they are also talking about the concept of skandhas, because they say there is a nama karma, which is what we call as rupa skandhas. There is nama karma, which decides what is going to be the nature of the body into which you will be born. There is ayu karma. Ayu karma is that which will decide how long will the person live. Gotra karma will decide into which family the person will be, to what parents the person will be born, and so on. And plus there are other karma, which in one way and another cause that inability in the person to go towards the spirituality, which as it were brings about an obstacle to his path in understanding knowledge, in cultivating faith. So this is what we have, goes by the name of your mental tendencies, your sensation vedana, your abstract powers, and so on. You see, that which is under karma, before we go to further explanation, that in your handout, karma says, the natural perfections of the pure soul are sullied by the different kinds of karma matter. And we'll see that this karma matter seems to be exactly what we are talking about as skandhas. Those which obscure right knowledge of details are called jnanavaraniya karma. Those which obscure right perception are called darshanavaraniya. Those which obscure the bliss nature of the soul and produce pleasure and pain are vedaniya. You will recognize the word vedana, sensation, as one part of the skandhas. And those which obscure right attitude of the soul towards faith and right conduct are called mohaniya, producing delusion. By our actions of mind, speech and body, we are continually producing certain subtle karma matter. And there are 4 kinds of karma which we have talked about. Now what is this karma matter which you actually draw to yourself? They say that you draw certain particles of matter to yourself and they attach themselves to your soul. This is exactly the teaching about formation of the skandha. They say that how do you draw the karma matter? It is through your speech, through your thoughts and through your action. And that's what we say, that at the base of speech and at the base of action is your thought. And what happens when the thought arises in the mind? It coalesces itself with an elemental and forms an entity, and this is how our skandhas are formed. These skandhas, they keep a magnetic link with the soul or the ego and then come back to him in the next life and determine the kind of body he will have, the kind of mental constitution he will have, the kind of emotional nature he will have, and so on. So that karma matter is what they call as ashrava or influx. There is an influx or ashrava of this karma matter. See ashrava. The influx of these karma particles into the soul is called ashrava. The ashravas represent the channels or modes through which the karmas enter into the soul, and they are 5 kinds: delusion, want of control, activities of the body, mind and speech, and passions. So through these channels or activities, you form an attachment of the soul. And later on also we are told about the 4 kinds of kasayas. These are trying to show how we form bondage of the soul. The kasayas are the passions like anger, vanity, pride, insincerity, tendency to dupe others, and greed. These kasayas cannot be removed except by control of the senses. And self-control alone leads to purity of mind. No kind of asceticism can be of any good until the mind is purified. When a man learns to look upon all beings with equality, samatva, he can effect conquest over raga, dvesha, attachment and aversion. So, in the first 2, bondage and ashrava, we have found out how the soul gets attached. In Samvara and Nirjara, you are told how the soul can become free. Samvara is that which tells you What kind of karma then will you create so that you can release your soul from the bondage? And it says, one, first of all, create such karma which are pure in nature. Abstain from creating the bad or evil karma through your speech, through your thought, through your action. So that is samvara. And also, the other aspect is, begin to liquidate your past debt. Both these things must happen. Not create fresh bad karma, and also begin to liquidate your past bad karma. Again, that which is, and that is called nirjana. Now, how will you liquidate your past debt? And again, the Jaina concept comes very close to theosophical concept, where they say, you liquidate your past debt in two ways. One, by setting into motion fresh good karma. Because karma doesn't work like one cause producing one effect. We know that sometimes many causes combined together produce one effect. So we always say it is a parallelogram of forces. What you experience is resultant of many causes which is producing one consequence. So sum total of good and bad karma is something which will produce the final consequence. Sometimes it is possible to mitigate your bad karma by the good karma. Sometimes it is possible to counteract also the bad karma by setting into motion good karma. Also, there is the other aspect. Supposing already the karma has begun to precipitate, then you are not able to do anything about it. Then what do? Then you accept the woes of birth. Without rebellion, without complaining, if you quietly accept what has come to you, try and find out what you have to learn. Why are you put into that situation? And therefore derive the lesson, bring about the necessary change in your nature, and then again you would succeed in liquidating your past karma. This is also a Jaina concept. Now, having seen this about the karmas, there is also the teaching that our bondage is formed therefore through ignorance. So, there is what is called as Ratnatraya. Like in Buddhism, there is the three jewels. Similarly, they also have Ratnatraya, three jewels or the three aspects, which are right conduct, right knowledge and right faith. We won't see much of right knowledge and right faith. Faith is not the blind faith, of course, faith in the teachers, faith in the scriptures to begin with, so that your knowledge increases and you begin to practice it. But right conduct is something exactly similar to the Buddhist concept of Panchashila, which is there in your handout. We don't want to say it. Ahimsa, not taking any life even by mistake or unmindfulness. Sunarata is just what we call as Satya, speaking the truth. Speaking in such a way as is true, good and pleasing. You will remember the laws of Manu. Asteya, not taking anything which is not been given. Brahmacharya, abandoning lust for all kinds of objects in mind, speech and body. And aparigraha, abandoning attachment for all things. Now the most important is ahimsa. As one of the later quotations says, non-violence is the highest religion. They say that ahimsa paro dharmaha. Non-violence is the highest religion. And we can see that a great emphasis is placed by Jainas on this non-violence or ahimsa. And they don't mean by ahimsa only external bodily violence. They place emphasis on the inner violence, near non-violence. You must not be violent in your thoughts. Thoughts of hatred, anger, envy, jealousy is also a form of violence. And you affect another being through your thoughts and your speech. There is also non-violence, which is in speech also, as we said, through feelings also. It is just like saying that virtue does not consist in abstaining from vice, but it consists in not even desiring it. So you have relinquished the vice right from within. It's not as if you have given up externally, but from within you have relinquished. So this is how non-violence externally and internally. What is the basis for non-violence? One, all souls are having equal potentiality. There is nothing like lower and higher. So equal reverence for all forms of life. Secondly, Nonviolence is based on the law of reciprocity. As the Bible says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or as Buddha said, putting yourself in place of another, one should neither slay nor cause to slay. Put yourself in place of another and then see. You insult someone and you get away. Just wait, think about it. What would I feel if I was spoken to like this? How would I feel if another person slaps me? How would I feel if another person does this, that and the other injury? So putting yourself in place of another, one should neither slay, also not cause to slay. This is also a very important aspect of ahimsa. Some people may not do the killing themselves, but there could be commissioned killing and indirect killing. Commission. You give incentive or money to someone to do the necessary deed of harming or injuring someone. But then you are indirectly responsible. Indirect killing, that is something which we are all guilty of. One takes some small examples, like we are not trying to say that therefore you should be vegetarian and all that. It's a very long question. But those of us who say are eating meat, to some extent therefore we are doing indirect killing. Because there is a demand for meat, there are people who have to kill animals. We all use certain medicines for which certain experiments are made on animals. There is vivisection, there are experiments, and we derive the benefit through the medicine. So there is indirect killing and we have a hand, as it were, you are responsible for that karma which is being created. Some of us wear fur coats, silk saris, for which silkworms are killed, so many minks are killed. Again, that becomes an indirect killing on our part. Now the Jainas, it's a very practical religion in a way, because they realize that it is true that a householder and a man of the world cannot completely avoid injury. So they have divided it into three categories which is unavoidable for a householder. For instance, there is accidental injury. When you are pounding something, when you are grinding something, when you are cooking something, you can't avoid injuring those tiny beings or lives, microbes or jivas as we say. Also, there is something which is known as occupational injury. Suppose you are a soldier, you go on the front and you fight. Suppose you are a policeman who has to protect the innocent. You are a farmer who has to do the tilling of the land. This is occupational injury which you can't avoid. Intentional injury is killing, like killing which a butcher does, of killing the animal in order to supply meat. But these are in a way unavoidable as far as you are where you are in a station in life. But as far as a Jaina monk is concerned, the sadhus and the sadhvis are concerned, they practice non-violence to the hilt. We know, why do they tie that white cloth over their mouth and over the covering the nose? Because as we said, they believe that there is not a space which is empty. It is full of these tiny lives, jiva. And as we breathe, as we open our mouth, millions of those lives are taken in. So many of them perish. So to avoid that, they put a cloth around the mouth and, as it were, try to practice non-violence up to the very hilt. So Panchashila, as it is practiced by a householder, ordinary man, they are called as Anuvrata. Anu is atom. They are the lesser vows. And those practiced by thoroughly and rigorously by a monk, they are called Mahavratas, or the greater vows. But each one is asked to practice up to his best ability. And the Jainas therefore have a whole chart, as it were, the steps, which they call as the levels of merit or 14 gunasthana. There are 14 gunasthana right from the journey of a person or a soul from where he is up to the point where he becomes a liberated soul, a mukta. He passes through 14 stages which are called as 14 gunasthana. And depending upon at what gunasthana is, it will decide what is his inner development. So, in the first four stages, they say that you have to learn to get rid of the wrong beliefs. We are all born into some religion, some background, some family. We have got right and wrong beliefs. So get rid of the wrong beliefs in the first four stages. In the fifth stage, you start practicing the Panchashilas as much as you can. And in fact, there comes the importance of what they call as the festival of Paryushan. We are all very familiar with the Jainas observing the festival of Paryushan, which is made up of either it lasts for 8 days or up to 10 days. This Paryushan is actually a festival of cultivating friendship with your own soul. It is a festival of purification of your soul. It's a festival where for 8 to 10 days, every Jaina forgets that he is a businessman, or he is having so much wealth, or he is having such a name or fame. And for those 8 to 10 days, he is completely turned to himself within in trying to know who he really is. That is why it is called those 10 days or festival of self-purification and cultivating friendship with that self, which we don't even recognize for the rest of the year. So at least for that 10 days, you become aware of that which is the real nature of you. And that is the real meaning. How many of them really do it? All that we have heard is that they do fasting, which is only a small part of Paryushan. Some of them, they do Nirjala Upvas, that is, without even taking water, they will remain for 8 days, 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, whatever. But more than that, what is being recommended is Pratikramana. What is Pratikramana? Pra is return and Atikramana is violation. It is like taking the stock of the entire year and finding out how many times did I violate these Panchashila, how many times did I tell the untruth, how many times did I do injury, how many times I took what was not mine, and so on. So it is Pratikramana. Returning from violation, that means again vowing that I am not going to break any of these rules or the vows. Rededicating yourself to living that ascetic life. That is Pratikramana. And the last day, which is Samvatsari, that is the day on which they do something very important, which we all know, which is called Michhami Dukhadam. Michhami means fruitless, and Dukhadam means anything evil or anything hurting. So each Jaina will tell others Michhami Dukhadam. Simply put, it means forgive me my trespasses. Forgive me if I have hurt you in my speech or in my body or in some way. But the exact meaning is fruitless. Making the evil fruitless, that means now it has died. Let us bury it. It will not have repercussions on our remaining relationship. We will both forget the harm which we have done to each other. So we will forgive each other and start as it were anew. And this forgiveness is considered very important in Jainism, so that sometimes it is stated, but we have not read anywhere, but that the 14 gunasthanas are actually as it were delineated as being those stages where a person learns to forgive quickly. You see, the quickness with which he can forgive the insult or injury, to that extent he is at a higher gunasthana. Some of us can't forget the injury. Some of us say, I can see you have insulted me, I'll wait my time. 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, someday I will get a chance and I'll give back to you. So we carry that knot within the heart for 10 years, 15 years. And the Jaina will put us on the very lowest position. Some of us may forget in 5 years, some may forget in 2 years, some in few months, some in few days. Time must come when you immediately forgive and forget. You don't even hold. It just doesn't register that someone has insulted and injured you. Now this is something very, very difficult to do, but that is where you will be ranked. How quickly you forget the injury or insult, depending on that is your level of merit, your inner development, which is going to be measured. Now, lastly, time is running out and we will only want to draw attention to two things about which we are not very familiar, is the concept of God, and we are told that they do not subscribe to the personal idea of God. And that's why, just like the Buddhists, even they are labeled almost as Nastikas. People feel that they don't believe or they don't have a concept of God. But no, they don't believe in a personal God, and it is a religion which is known as self-help religion. They say that don't turn to God asking him for favors. Like Buddha says, don't offer fruits and cakes. He can do nothing. God cannot really help you You have to win your own salvation. Don't point out to a person who is suffering and say that it is God's will. No, it is not God's will. And therefore, you have to help him also in winning his own salvation. So, this is a self-help religion. But what they turn to is the Tirthankaras. These liberated souls are looked upon as the ideals. Like we say, Mahatmas are ideals and facts. And as Mr. Jat says, that meditation on the higher self is difficult, so seek then the bridge, the masters. So also a Jaina will meditate on the Tirthankaras, he will try to emulate their compassion and their qualities, study the scriptures which is left behind and so on. Lastly, just as they consider very important art of living, which is living according to the Jaina philosophy, equally important is the art of dying, as they say, that there is this concept which is only peculiar to Jaina religion and philosophy, where you find that they seem to say that when the time comes, die with utmost indifference. Die bravely and with complete detachment. And the concept is also existing in the Jaina, which is of voluntary death. It is called as Salekhna. And in the colloquial Gujarati, it is called as Santharo Lido. You know, so and so person has taken Santhara. Santharo, but that is, the writers put it as Salekhna. So, a person can voluntarily give up his life. Ideally speaking, conditions put are when a person is very old and he thinks that, well, he has done what he had to do in this world. And now, I just want to leave it. That is one case. When he is suffering from illness for which there is no cure, if it is a time of famine where he sees that there is no way of getting food, he can simply withdraw himself from the body and then give up, as it were, the bodily attachment. And the Jainas make it very clear that there are very strict regulations regarding taking this Santharo or Salekhna, and it is not at all suicide, which is something which they regard as cowardly sin. You are not committing suicide, but you are withdrawing your will so completely that it almost very naturally, the connection between soul and body is broken. And like a ripe fruit, you are able to leave the body and go. We don't know much about it, but this is a very common practice which we now and then read in the papers. And it is said that so and so has taken, done Salekhna or something. It's a very central concept also of Jainism. We have only 2 to 3 minutes for answering questions. Must be, but stays after that, at least from whatever little we have read, we have not come across any definite stages being mentioned in the Jaina philosophy. But we can always find out what they have to say. But at present, we are not aware. Only thing is that they do believe in rebirth. It doesn't look like that, because very ordinary people also take up this, what is called as voluntary death. Very ordinary Jaina people, in their old age, quite a few of them, they take up this Santharo or Salekhna. It is not the monk only who is doing it. But in old age, very ordinary people also do this voluntary death. But it is not as easy as it sounds. It's not so easy really to withdraw yourself completely. It is a complete withdrawal of your will. After all, there is one article, unfortunately the book is not here. In 5 years of Theosophy, there is an article called The Elixir of Life. And there we are told that just as it is the most important ingredient, as it were, the most important thing in enhancing your life is the will to live. If there is a will to live, then even if the body may be in a way crumbling, many times you see the patient, you know, he has such a strong will to live, which we call as Jiji Visha. Because of that, the doctors say that actually there is nothing now, and yet they are able to continue. The most important is that will to live. Similarly, that same will, when one gives up, then even when sometimes the body is otherwise all right, it is possible for the separation to take place. That withdrawal of the will, which is complete withdrawal of the will. But as we said, we don't know anything much about it. But this is actually done. It is not as if it is something in the past. But even now, they do openly say that such and such a person has taken this voluntary death or something. I think our time is up and we won't be able to take any more questions.